listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
But I bet you my bottom dollar, I'm not fighting no more for snakes. I started checking. I found out my downfall from 1930. I'm telling all of my friends I'm not back in normal fall for snakes. All right now. I got to correct all of my mistakes. Oh, man, 1957, I got to correct all of my mistakes. I'm telling my friends, including my wife and everybody else, not bad no more frog for snake.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. We're here today on a day after Christmas 2010, and thank you for joining. I'm pretty excited about the coming year, and want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening with us, and going to the website. As always, it's at carol@carolcox.com, and the email is carol@carolcox.com. That's C-A-R-R-O-L-L. And anytime you have any ideas or news stories or things you want to talk about, get off your chest. There's nothing here pretentious. We're not trying to be actors or Walter Cronkites and the Currits or any of those professionals, but we do want to be factual and try to make a difference, and at minimum educating people to some of the things that may not be introduced to the general media or just don't hit their radar. But anyway, many of you have joined in, and I thank all of you for your compliments and encouragement. But what just this morning looking at, we're at the 345,000 requests on the website. That's pretty impressive, so that means I hope that this will continue and all of you find it a source for information. And again, please don't hesitate. And this is, I want to emphasize, this is an effort on my part to try and strike a balance, in that most of us are frustrated with lack of news, or we think that it's not being told in total or in the details that we would like. And so if you have details and or think that you want to add a different perspective, it seems to be limiting who has right to comment on news in this state, in this country. When you turn on the TV, you notice that a great many of us, we call it a melting pot, but it appears that many of us are not welcome, or our opinions are not welcome. And I don't understand that, and it's been prevalent for years. And so, again, this is our little way of attempting to let all of us chime in and let our voices be heard. One of the great things about this is we have President Obama in town, and And we all should be pleased with that. And I have to chuckle and laugh. Just, you never count a man out, such as President Barack Obama. I just 3 weeks ago, people were telling him to throw in the towel, and it was over. And he came and so eloquently said he took a shellacking. And from that I learned, which I've noticed that many a times, when you do fail, it's just at a few things. It's not in total. And look what he did. Bounce back. Now, I don't know what the solution was or what he did or his team did or who advised him, but my goodness, a lame duck president, he flew in some of the strongest winds of opposition, and look what he was able to do. Mind you, I know many of us out here won't be comfortable until he does the perfect and make the perfect decision. There's always going to be something. And he traded off, and he's a sellout, and we're going to make that claim. But the reality is, I was told long time ago that good politics is when you compromise and you work with the, quote, other side. While we're all Americans, there is the other side. And it's not clear what the other side is. We try and define it by being liberal, being right-wingers, being evangelical, voting PAC. Now we got the Tea Party, and as we see in this whole effort, this lame duck president wasn't just lamed or impacted by the opposing side of the party, the Republican Party. He was impacted also by his own type, or supposedly of his own ilk. And so I think that what I've observed, I witnessed that when he made that statement, President Obama made that statement about taking a shellacking. That's an old term in the South we use. And when someone admits that, you'd better watch out. They're not saying they're throwing in the towel. They're not telling you they're giving up. They're saying, we recognize the whipping we took. But you'd better beware. And if you've lived in the South, you could have seen something coming. I'll be very honest with you. I don't know where he got the fight from, but I think probably it's just in the spirit, being the American type, just having exposed and knowing the need to fight and never lay down. And that's what we are about as people, as a nation. So anyway, I hope that we all now take a different look. We were excited when he ran for president, and we were excited when he got in, and then our excitement waned, and we then became a little bit confused, and we put the onus on him, and I'm not defending him. I hope all of you know that if I find that he's doing something wrong, I'll be here to talk about it, or you feel free to call up and talk about it. But in this instance, we got a chance to observe something that is truly American. Not a shot fired, and this everybody seemed to have worked out. We got DAT, it was repealed, and now some of you might not agree with that, but my God, just living in a world where let people be judged by those that have the job of judging, and not us as neighbors and friends and co-workers and evangelicals or politicians. Those that, if someone is doing something, quote, wrong, and as it relates to the biblical sense or what have you, or morally, then let it be dealt and handled by the true authorities, not by individuals with opinions, and we don't really know where their opinions are based on or what they come from or what they stem from. So what we need to do is just take a moment and acknowledge that it was brilliant. And I don't know, as I say, it may later show that he gave away the candy shop and the land that it sits on. Who knows? But to see such a turnaround, and there's a lot of people, their jaws are dropped, and they don't know where to go now. So I guess the best way to keep it going, though, it's the birthers, for example. They want to know still if he's an American citizen. And that's absolutely amazing. How much is enough is enough? And how do we get past that point? And as Senator Willis Sparrow and the other folks attempted to resolve this issue by identifying vexatious requesters, anyone that would basically find themselves annoying the state government. And as I had spoken with Senator Sparrow, is that it was a waste of time and a waste of ink and a waste of money and a waste of his legislative efforts, and that you create this room and you impact and you diminish the quality of that's already at stake here, the quality and the integrity of the Uniform Information Practices Act and the office that it represent, and making sure that the public has right to access and information. So he wrote this bill and others introduced this bill, and all the person that has to do that wants to continue to annoy the system or ask for the birthing, which this law was supposed to stop, is to get his friend to do it or send it in another person's name. And it frustrates the system, and I think the questions have already been answered. And as many say, who cares if he's, unless we can prove that he is not a citizen of this country, then I think most of you should put it to rest and let's move on with trying to do something about the good things. Let's fight hunger. Let's fight drug abuse. Let's take care of the environment. Let's do all of those things, and maybe if we got busy, just 1 hour a day, caring about the simplest things, the neighbors, the friends, the animals, whatever, we'd probably be miles ahead of the frustration that we seem to wake up every morning and we can get to see. So, anyway, if you got a question or have a comment, this is the end of the year, so I was going to come in and have some things I wanted to talk about, but I want to wait until next year, and it involves the city offices and the failure on the part of the city administrators to clean house, and we'll be talking about those. And again, I don't want to be premature and jumping ahead of the game, but I'm a little concerned that the city and the state government, as we have two people, Mr. Abercrombie and Mr. Carlisle. We see the plan that they're putting forth and what have you. But I want to know if they're going to clean up government. They're saying they're going to go seek more money from federal funds and what have you. But as I've pointed out many occasions, we can save money and probably give the federal government back some money on their programs if we were to tidy up the misuse, the abuse, and all of those things. If we would go out there and when a contractor put pavement down on the road, give us a contract. We gave him a contract, give us a guarantee. Change the specs in building the roads or in laying down. Go and explore some other means. That's how we'll save money, to reach out and I notice Abercrombie, his thing is a little safety valve, like on the airplane, reach under the seat for the life jacket, pull the little tab if you find yourself hitting water. And it seems that Mr. Abercrombie is going to open his life jacket inside the plane. They tell you not to do that. So that opening that life jacket inside the plane is that constant, we're going to reach out and try to get more tax dollars from the federal sources. No, let's just stay within and clean up. Let's reduce the number of trucks that we see parked. Let's go back and make an evaluation of the equipment that you see sitting idle. There are some instances where state equipment, tractor mowers and other equipment, just sit for months So that suggests we don't need that equipment. And maybe we have too many. And then when you see, you drive by and you see one man down in the hold and six people standing and looking down in the hole, that's how you start to clean up government. Maybe allow only two people to stand and look in the hole. Because that suggests we have six people there that has PhDs in digging holes because they don't want to get their hands dirty or what have you. And when they do it on weekends, there's so much money to be saved in the trickery. And we talk about furloughs when they say, well, we're going to do away with the furlough days and what have you. To be honest with you, from what I know and what we had in the past year, the furlough as it relating to state workers and what have you, it was truly a shabai. And what I mean by that is that primarily most state and city government people, they would take off on the day of the furlough. And this is, I can give you specific offices that conduct themselves in this fashion. They would not come on the furlough day, which was a Friday, but they would create work on a Saturday. And this was, in most cases, well, all cases would be authorized by superiors because to create more work. So let's say you worked 8 hours on a Friday, but you were furloughed. So that was to save money. But then you were given a task that really can wait till Monday. But you're given a task that's create work where you come in on a Saturday and you work. But on Saturdays, you get time and a half. So, in other words, we just basically delayed you. You don't work on a Friday, so you don't get paid for that day. You come on a Saturday, you'll get your 8 hours, and then you'll get time and a half. So we, as taxpayers, were through this, whatever you call it, we gave 4 hours of extra work, which cost us, as taxpayers, in the furlough. I pointed out the Department of Transportation, Highways Division, was doing it. And so not just the general workers benefit from this. You also have others benefiting. See, you take the city, for example, the Roads Division. In order to have a crew out, there must be a superintendent or a higher authority there overseeing this. So the superintendent is quite natural, is happy to come because he or she too gets that extra money by just, and this is makeshift work that probably, and while this is all going on, potholes are getting deeper, wider, and more numerous. So my recommendation to when we see Mr. Abercrombie and Mr. Carlisle to talk about reducing and doing away with furloughs, that's well appreciated. But on the other hand, let's go back and shut government down and all of the bare essentials on Saturdays and Sundays and holidays, emergency things that are needed. And then let's go back and look at, in the city aspect, let's go back and see some of these non-essential people that report daily that are conducting themselves doing other tasks from the old administration, the linger-ons or the Klingons. If we were watching Star Wars, it would be the Klingons, or in my terms, it would be the pain in the neckers. But they're sucking us dry. And so I look at this four-point plan that the Mr. Abercrombie is submitting today, and I just got to tell you, as smiley face and as happy as we all were to see new government, I think we probably, he is going to give us the poster child for abusive government. Look at some of his picks, for example. We just see that in the health department, for example. We see he reaches back over his shoulder and digs down to the bottom and recycles Gary Gill back to the health department. And as the deputy director, this isn't a sign of new thinking. This has nothing to do with, and it suggests that, once again, these programs that he talked about and the newness and being innovative, just not going to happen. And you look at some of the appointees, he's had the opportunity now, he being Mr. Abercrombie, to appoint Amaral and as senator. Well, what has she done? Why did he pick her? She ran with Randy Wassey, and I think they came in second to Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, I think, on the voting for governor. She was running for lieutenant governor. And I don't want to be advocating for other media sources, but I do believe that it's good to look at all sources, whether it's a Republican spin or Democratic spin, but and you can learn some things. So I'm going to suggest that a lot of you go out there and pull up the HawaiiFreePress.com, HawaiiFreePress.com. And, you know, quite naturally, there's a lot of, it's politics. And some of us will do things and tell the truth based on politics, and others will tell the truth just because it's the truth. But nonetheless, the facts, I don't think, change. It's just the, if you can tolerate the commentary at the end, like here, we have our own opinions and comments, but try to go there, and I'm suggesting this, and go to the Hawaii Reporter. Why am I suggesting this? Because there is no one watching the hen house now. All of the foxes in the wild kingdom is now guarding the gate, so to speak, in our state and city government, all of them. And if you want me to, I'll give you specific names and what have you. And we have to try and get a handle on this. Now, again, I apologize for the suggestion you go and look to the other side for sources of information, because there's probably some of you can't stomach that if you're truly Democratic or Democrats, but it's worth it. And you'll see stories like Andrew Whalen wrote an article on Amaral. He writes about Kahele, Mel Kahele, who's trying to get it in city council. So it's worth reading, and it's worth giving a little attention to, because there's some strange things that are going to occur here. And again, with great caution, I want to suggest that, you know, I'm not advocating for Republicans. I mean, they got a whipping, as Mr. Obama described, a shellacking, and it was deserving. And we'll talk about those things later, and as I've talked about before. But overall, it's about we as citizens in this state have a great thing of value to lose. Taxes are higher. You register a car now, it goes higher, but no accountability in government. And unfortunately, it appears now in this economy, the only one that's making a profit, and a true profit in this economy, is government workers. What do they do? How much do they invest? What is their capital that they put in, other than getting in the car and driving to work, catching the bus? But when it's all said and done at the end of the day, or the end of the year, they're pretty much looking at a raise, and going to have good insurance. But what are they giving us back? If you went to Walmart and bought something and it didn't work, you take it back. Walmart would see its profits take a dive. if it was habitual and it repeated itself. Well, in this case, government workers who are out dumping cement in the rivers, not watching and spending excessively on chemicals to treat the sewage treatment plants, but while trying to mask that, they're having sewage spills, and but yet we send them to school, and then we give them higher salaries and what have you, and all of their kids have the finest medical care and all of that. And so when I see the mayor, the new mayor and the new governor talk about these plans, but I don't see them giving specifics. All I see is that they reach back in the old bag and pull out an old trick, namely, you know, when you have the head of the Department of Health. We had more illegal dumping, more sewage dumps, more sewage spills, more dirty water, and all of that under the Anderson-Gill leadership. And so Mr. Abercrombie reached back and grabbed him, and he'll sit there and rubber stamp anything and everything, and never, under that administration, for example, they refused to take on the Wahiwa Reservoir, still dumping and pumping sewage and allowing sewage to be dumped in there. So all of these things, really, if we were to nip them in the bud, we would save millions within 1 month if someone would just listen. But there's no one listening because they've circled themselves with friends, and a few names, new names came into the fold, but these have been people that have never demonstrated that they can actually do or get anything done. We don't have a track record for them. So when you get very new people, inexperienced, and then you bring in the old, it's like taking clean dirt and mixing it with old dirt. An old broom. You're just moving the dirt around or bringing new people in. Bring in, be daring. Bring in someone that doesn't run out and post posters for you on the side of the street that's claiming vote for Mr. X. Don't reward people at the taxpayer's expense just because they are part of the party. Don't reach back and appoint a Malamas Amaral and when you know the people said, no, we didn't want her for this or that, so we elevate her to senator. So, and there are many questions about that. But anyway, 524-1080 if you have a question or comment. And very loosely, and I'm going to go to another song, and we'll get right back with you.
Tell me the sun's the middle of a day when they fit the bat around. Lord, they fit the bat around. Walk on tumbling down. Children, ain't you glad? You great. Oh, George, you fit the bat around Jericho, Jericho. George, you fit the bat around Jericho. A walk on tumbling together. You hear an awful sound. Lord, they march around Jericho all 7 times. Tell me to walk, come tumbling down. Hey, for the bear around Jericho, Lord.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, 524-1080. If any of you out there have anything you want to talk about, we're just going to be loosely talking and trying to do some recap. And as you know, just a rough estimate, unfortunately, as I walk through the streets now, people tell me, you cost me, joking, of course, you cost me. My taxes are going to go up. How's that? Well, you take my Ely stream. They spent all that money on overtime. We lost that. Then they got regular time. We lost that. Taxpayers did. Then they get fined $1.73 million. We lost that. And it's going to take another $1.3 million. To go back in with the contractor and COGA to do that. And then there's going to be city workers involved later and the materials and what have you. So roughly, just an estimate, I would say close to $5 to $6 million for a illegal act on the part of a department and the department heads. And you know something funny is that you haven't heard a single utterance from city government or state government as to who's going to get prosecuted or punished for this. So this is why I, as you probably hear in my voice, don't give too much credence or credit to the claims. Now we're going to put this economy back together and we're going to do it for the people of the state of Hawaii, because we haven't even come in on the ground level. There should have been a task force to review some of these things, that the fraud and abuse on furloughs, the fraud and abuse on city government, the fraud and abuse in state government. There should be an actual a base at the ground level, a starting point. Let's do an audit. Let's do a couple of audits to start off right and see where we went wrong. And can we, do we need extra money? And how much can we give back to the federal government? It's possible, because, as I say, I see more city trucks driving around with 2 and 3 guys in them. Yeah, they may be going to change the wheel on a trash can, but do we really need that kind of service? Do we need to pay someone their insurance and pay the children's insurance to have two guys to go take a gray can and serve as a can? Or is it possible that at the convenience centers or other places that a citizen having a broken wheel can go to a convenience center or a city yard and pick up a wheel and put it on themselves? It is this kind of frivolous, exhaustive cost that we could eliminate. And then we can come up with and take some of that money that we save that's being stolen and we're being defrauded of, and we can pay to get and keep the good police officers, pay to keep the good firemen, upgrade our equipment, have greater awareness on fire. In the last year, we've had crazy things happening. People are dying in fires. I mean, it's almost as if we've abandoned. We don't see as much public awareness and prevention because we're seeing it squandered and along the streets. And we, as I mentioned earlier, we need to go back and say to any company that has a contract to pave the streets that if you, your street that you pave for us, this section of street, if you have potholes, then you have a defective product. And it is your responsibility as part of this contract. And some of you may argue, well, it's going to cost us more money. Well, it's costing you more money anyway because you got to go and buy the hot asphalt that the city crews now run around patching potholes, and that once they buy, as we've demonstrated on the show here, a lot of it get wasted because unless they move fast enough, you buy two truckloads or what have you, by the second truckload, if you don't have a crew that's moving fast and putting it down fast enough, it hardens and they got to get rid of it. So we lose money there. But that's the kinds of things that hopefully in the coming months in 2011, I will be focusing on that and looking at some of the illegal dumping issues that possibly we can come up with a solution. And then maybe we need something. Someone should step up to the plate and address the homeless issue, because I'm seeing more children than I've seen before, believe it or not. You drive down Ala Moana and the parks there, there are cars there, and there, inside of those cars are children, little kids, kids that are school age, and some of them are preschool. And they're living in the cars. And where's our outreach for that? Now, I know a lot of you will call up and say, well, now you're suggesting a welfare state. Yes, I am. Because it's a shame to be concerned with creating a welfare state and let people suffer. I would rather be a nation of givers than to be a nation of takers and haters or people that are insensitive and don't care, because at the end of the day, your bank account may increase and swell, but it's still human beings, it's your fellow man that we're really impacting. And is it the children's fault? While we can argue that it's the parents who made the bad decisions, but is it the children's fault? And so it speaks to our character if we continue. We as citizens allow this to continue. And what are we going to do? Are we so busy that the system has us in a circle and a whirlpool that we're getting sucked down to? But anyway, the city council has a new crew, and everybody was voted. There's a term limit, and I'm in receipt of a communication, a memorandum, 211 from the city council. And this is from the council chair, Nestor Garcia. And he states this communication, which supersedes all previous memorandums, transmits details of council committee assignments effective January 2nd, 2011. Now, I don't know Robert's Rules of Order and all of that, and maybe some of you can probably help shed some light on this, but I'm thinking, how does one issue a council communication and say that it supersedes this and the committee assignments? The council members have not been sworn in, and when did they convene? Is there a meeting behind closed doors, that their executive meeting that they convened but had not been sworn in? I don't know, but he states, he being Mr. Garcia, I would like to take this opportunity to thank our outgoing colleagues, Council Members Lee Donahue, Gary Aquino, Reed Matsuura, and Rod Tam for their untiring education and service to the people of Oahu. We have certainly become a better community because of your efforts. Mahalo. And here is the actual committee that he's listing, voting members. The chair on budget is Ernie Martin. Vice chair is Tulsi Gabbard Tamayo, Stanley Ching, Breen Harimoto, and Ms. Kobayashi. Now the question is, and I want all of you to watch this now. Mr. Ernie Martin has a history there within the old administration government. Now, while it is true that people voted him in, it was a democratic process, just be forewarned that there is activities that have occurred in his administration and his oversight of the city office that he ran relating grants and what have you. Some big questions, and I've raised a couple where there's Ms. Patty Teruya, who worked through him, was on the committee, and money was given to a number of organizations, nonprofits, and Ms. Teruya, in turn, was on the committee selecting the money, the committee and reviewing proposals, and on and on and on, in that capacity as a committee review member. And then she served as an officer and the Waimanala Coalition Construction Coalition, led by Mr. also one of the members of officers, was Mr. Andrew Jamila. Now, these things went on. There's a couple of those that went on in there. And then there are other questions that are raised. So this is now, Mr. Martin is now the chairman on budget. Is he going to be able to be free of any taint, or is he going to bring old ways, or will he be able to look back at his friends now and say, no, we're going to do it the right way? So just sharing this with you, the Committee on Executive Matters and Legal Affairs, the EMLA, is Rami Kachola, who's the chair. Breen Harimoto is the vice chair. And Committee on Parks and Human Services is that's Council District 1 elected member. Now, I don't know how this works, so if some of you understand it and know how it works, how does one pick committee members and committee heads, assign them, when they haven't been sworn in and here's a vacant District 1 position that is still vacant? How does that work? If some of you know, please help me understand this. But the chair position is whomever will win that position for the Committee on Parks and Human, win that voting, the election out there that's occurring now. But Ikaika Anderson is the vice chairman. Committee on Planning, Ms. Kobayashi is the chair, Ann Kobayashi. Again, the vice chair is District 1 elected member. Committee on Parks, on Public Works and Sustainability, Chairman is Stanley Chang and Vice Chair is Ms. Kobayashi. And Ms. Tulsi Gabbard Tamayo is also on that. Council District 1 elected members also on that committee. Committee on Safety, Economic Development and Government Affairs. The chairperson is Tulsi Gabbard Tamayo. Mr. Stanley Chang is the vice chair. Committee on Transportation and Transit Planning, Now, that's Breen Hormoto, who's the chairman, and Ernest Martin is the vice chair. And keep in mind, Mr. Martin worked under and was nurtured by Mr. Mufi Hanneman as a former mayor. Voting member on the Committee on Zoning is that the chairman is Ikaika Anderson. Mr. Romy Cotrola is the vice chair. Other council matters, Hawaii State Association of Counties and what have you. The big question I have is that how did we arrive at these assignments? And not suggesting something was wrong, but I didn't understand how something can supersede, and yet these individuals that have been appointed and on that these boards have not taken an oath or sworn in, and so they're not official. So does that mean if they get in, or have they had a meeting to phone calls or call up, and does the public have a right to witness that, or is there a transparency rules on that, or sunshine issues? So I'm just curious about that part as to how we arrived at this. And again, that was Council Communication 211. It even has a number. He earlier wrote one that did not have a number, but this one now has a number. So that's the kinds of things that raises big questions, or flag goes up, and we should be curious as to how we arrive at this juncture, and how can we save money, and all of those things. So again, it's something that that jumps out at me. And I've also want to share with you that a great number of you have called me and sought permission to download information on Mr. Jamila, the Waimanalo Construction Coalition, and that matter relating to Ms. Teruya, Patty Teruya. And I've even had her attorney. By the way, she hired an attorney, Mr. Don Picaro, who called me, and they were basically threatening to sue me because I was raising issues about her use of funds on the Waimanalo Coalition, Construction Coalition. Now, a great many of you have called in, and you called or either wrote me and asked me for permission if you could take that information and provide this information, because you were having meetings with Mr. Peter Carlisle, and to bring to his attention these and other actions taken by Ms. Teruya. Well, I'm told now, I don't have any confirmation of this, that she is still having an integral role in the Carlisle administration. She's still employed. The Ethics Commission, Mr. Chuck Tato, and I use that term ethics loosely. I mean, I might as well go downtown on River Street and say everybody there is ethical when you see what's being produced. And we'll talk about some of this later on in the next hour. But she's there in that office and are working in that administration. So will there be any punishments and any retribution? And I got to tell you, those of you out there, if you don't know me by now, and I don't want to be a braggart or what have you, but when truth and when people flirt with the trust that we as a free nation and free people and taxpayers, when I query and ask my government or government employees about their behavior, and you run and get an attorney, and then you think you're scaring me, you're out of your wits. You have to either be on drugs or have a very unskilled doctor who's prescribing you some medicine that you should try to get off. Because when you do that, all you do for me is get me excited, and I'll dig deeper, harder, and faster. Because you're in the arena of public trust. This isn't a stage where you're entertaining us. You're not producing a product and you're selling us. You are entrusted with our trust. So when you go get an attorney, and it's some interesting issues to be raised on this, when if Patty Turia is a city employee, and using her, by the way, the information that I'm quoting comes from her city email, and you were the deputy city prosecutor, and you didn't prosecute her, I don't know the technical issues, but I thought that even as a city employee, you'd be... There are rules that say you can't go back and once you were a city employee, you can't contract or work for the city for a certain time. I don't know if this applied to the deputy city council or city corporation or the lawyers, but these questions come about. So I'm really afraid and shaken, as you can tell in my voice. I mean, I'm hiding now, but no, I invite anyone, when you're stealing from us, bring it on. And I'll sit in jail and rot, but I will tell you, I will be doing a lot of talking and a lot of exposés. So we're going to take a break for the next hour of the Carol Cox Show. We'll see you shortly.
Lightning catch you trying to shake your thing. You know the pity, it's a crying shame. All right, that's what I'm talking about. Shameful woman, tell you she ain't got no name, and she's all the time trying to stand up and shake her thing. That's a shame. Boy, that's a crying shame. To let full lightning catch you.
Listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.
Pre-treat the roads even before the first flake. In D.C., where any snow is drama, the Department of Transportation Director Gabe Klein says the more that falls, the nastier it will get.
The pavement temperatures are extremely low, so it's going to be slippery, even with the pre-treatment overnight.
In Virginia, VDOT spokeswoman Joan Morris says heavy post-holiday traffic will make things much harder. They will focus on the main roads, and that could leave the subdivisions for tomorrow. Hank Silverberg for CBS News, Washington.
Snow emergency declared in Philadelphia, where the NFL is postponing tonight's scheduled game between the Eagles and the Vikings. Mayor Michael Nutter.
So during the game, you would be looking at potentially 3 to 6 inches of snow coming down in the middle of a game, plus 35-mile-an-hour winds. Challenging conditions for both fans and the players. And so I think the NFL and the Eagles made the right decision.
Blizzard warnings posted in New York and Boston right now. Snow covers a lot of the country on this day after Christmas. Weather's nice in a lot of places, too.
I'm Lee Frank at Copper Mountain, Colorado. Skiers and snowboarders are enjoying way deeper than average snowpack and mild, sunny weather, a perfect combination in the mountains. Down in Denver, there's been almost no snow. It's warm in the 50s. People are out riding bikes and playing golf.
Casper Mountain. Mountain, Wyoming this holiday, two people killed. Male snowboarder striking a woman and her five-year-old daughter at a pretty high speed on the ski run. Hogadon Ski Area Manager Gary Van Treese.
Reports from eyewitnesses estimate he was traveling anywhere from 40 to 50 miles per hour.
22-year-old snowboarder and the little girl pronounced dead at the scene. The mother remains hospitalized. Controversial and since abandoned element of the president's health care reform legislation may be making a comeback. New York Times reporting that efforts to encourage doctors to discuss end-of-life planning with Medicare patients could be achieved outside of Congress through regulation.
It's going to be lumped in with discussions about exercise and blood pressure and cholesterol screening. So in that sense, I think it's not quite enough time dedicated to advanced directives, but it's such an important first step.
Dr. Stacy Fisher, University of Colorado School of Medicine, studies the value of end-of-life planning. Economic outlook for 2011, I'm Dan Revive. A little Christmas cheer in the economic forecasts that CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason's been hearing.
The outlook for next year is significantly brighter, I think, and is going to be improving throughout the year as it goes.
No guarantees, but companies plan to make more and sell more, and that should mean more hiring. The unemployment rate is just below 10%, but others who could be looking for jobs have given up for now.
This is CBS News.
Do you know why so many people have trouble learning new languages? Because they make the mistake of trying to learn it when they should just absorb it. And right now, a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone will show you how. So stop memorizing, stop translating, and please stop doing drill after boring drill. Because now you can unlock your hidden language learning potential with the world's fastest, easiest way to learn, Rosetta Stone. We don't want you to take our word for it. We don't even want you to listen to the U.S. diplomats, over 10,000 schools, or NASA, who all believe in our program. We just hope you'll accept our free demo so you can experience the power of Rosetta Stone for yourself. Discover the secret to learning a language faster than you ever imagined. For your free demo, call 1-800-906-6981. Don't try to learn a language. Just absorb it. Call 1-800-906-6981. 1-800-906-6981.
2011. What can we expect from the Obama administration?
I'm Tom Foti. As the president relaxes in Hawaii, far away from rough, real Washington weather, and predictions of rougher political weather to come, some of his top assistants are sizing up things recently done and what next. Senior advisor Valerie Jarrett told NBC's Meet the Press, the president and Congress heard the voters' message and reacted.
They wanted us to deliver on behalf of the American people, and I think what we saw over the course of the last few weeks is just that.
Looking ahead, any big cabinet changes expected, Press Secretary Robert Gibbs?
I don't expect big changes. I think we've had a very capable and good cabinet.
He was on CNN's State of the Union. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
Israel's foreign minister says a peace deal with the Palestinians is impossible under current conditions and that Israel should not pursue one. The Israeli official, Avigdor Lieberman, telling his country's diplomats that Israel should instead seek a long-term interim agreement on security and economic matters. Palestinians have consistently rejected that approach. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
During Rite Aid's Resolution Rewards, you can resolve to get savings on top of your savings with your Wellness Plus card. Like a $20 plus up reward when all your purchases, now through January 22nd, add up to $100 or more on thousands of specially marked products all over the store. You'll also be entered to win prizes totaling $100,000 every time you use your card. So make your resolution to earn Resolution Rewards at Rite Aid today. No purchase necessary for sweepstakes. Certain restrictions apply. See store for details.
Sears Blue Crew, how can I help?
So, my family had its annual Christmas sledding match, but instead of snow, there was mud.
Oh.
And my ancient washer and dryer aren't getting the job done.
Well, right now, Sears has great savings on innovative appliances that can tackle anything. Save 20 to 30% off brand.
To the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. And Little Richard and Lightning Hopkins, and all of that is taken from the Great Tomato Blues collection. So if you're interested in blues or this sparked your interest, go out and listen to some of the great, the old Great Tomato Blues. And a lot of it is from the Delta, and as you can hear there, Little Richard and all. And I'm sure some of you teenagers out there, you young folk, you know of that, and it's bring back memories, I'm sure. So anyway, that's what we're up to here, and just trying to bring back memories and look to the future now. 2011 is right around the corner. And hopefully that brings us new things, new ideas, and new ways. But there's a couple things, and back on the city. As you know, last week I spoke briefly, and many of you asked to speak more in detail this time. But I'm going to hold off, but I will say this. As you know now, Mr. Rod Tam, there you saw in the paper the other day that they're going to exploring a new charge on him. Now, this isn't a support statement. This has nothing to do with Mr. Tam and his issues as to support or not support, if he's guilty or innocent. What this speaks of is that, as you heard me say last week, that there was a memo that Mr. Chuck Tuttle, our State Ethics Commission, sent me asking me to tear up a document that what spoke to some of the behavior of Mr. Charles DeJoux, or former Congressman Charles DeJoux, and where I had filed a complaint that there was some abuse on his part on accepting funds and travel assistance and expenditures from a private donor. And on three separate occasions, I was told that it was they couldn't find any. It was unsubstantiated, and on and on and on. Even the commission sent out, but they accidentally sent me an opinion A020104 that talked about Mr. DeJoux, and specific to the subject that I had raised, the one that said they didn't find anything to substantiate my claims. But in this opinion, it spoke specifically and it substantiated my claims. But they tried to conceal that, and to this day, I don't know why Mr. Tuttle would have thought that I would consider tearing up a document that would reflect that what I had alleged was true, and that that Ethics Commission was, and the commission itself, was covering up for Mr. DeJoux. But he had the gall to ask me to tear it up, and he would send me a redacted copy. That one goes into America's dumbest crooks, as far as I'm concerned. Unfortunately, we don't have a video of it, though. It would darn sure show on the evening news. But so this is this office that we see now is bringing charges against Mr. Tam. And way back I shared with my listeners, you out there, that when I went to file this complaint on Mr. DeJue, I saw immediately that there was going to be some cover-up on the part of the Ethics Commission to protect Mr. DeJue. I don't know why. I don't know if it's political. I don't know why. If he's just a likable guy and they didn't want to harm his chances of becoming a congressman for a couple of months. But it did serve to influence our votes, or it didn't give the public all the details and that would allow us to make an informed decision in our voting. So, but while there, I'm speaking directly in person with Mr. Toto. Sounds like we're going off to see the wizard or something, but I'm sitting there, and I've not seen an official so happy, and his response was, paraphrasing him, "I got Rod Tam." Now, I wasn't there to talk about Rod Tam. And he also mentioned that he had some serious things on Todd Oppo, at the time councilman. But he claimed that he had already vetted the issue with Mr. DeJue, and so I filed my complaint. He tasked me with putting all the details in, and then they covered it up. So, again, I don't want to sound as if I'm defending Rod Tam, but one must ask, to be fair, why would our government lend itself, and why would we trust that if they're willing? And I have this document. It's posted on carolcox.com, by the way, the documents. You can see the opinion where Mr. Toto and the letter where he asked me to tear it up. That's carol@carolcox.com is the email, and carolcox.com, carolcox.com, is the actual website. And last week you can go there and pull up those documents and see for yourself the willingness that someone would, I would file a complaint and they would think that I would in turn tear up evidence to assist them in further covering up and conceal and reflect that I was filing an erroneous complaint. This information shows that I was accurate. So I wouldn't dare cover it up just for that purpose. But anyway, you the taxpayer, you the reader, you the listener, and the decider, which is you probably see this thing play out in the news and the newspapers. I'm not defending Rod Tam. I think if he stole from the taxpayers, then they should glue his hands to the table with super glue and at Denny's and or Zippy's or wherever until he can pay us back or whatever. Maybe inhumane, but do it the right way, but also punish the other officials that steal from us, that squander, that fail to report, that fail to and conceal things. Don't hold off until the elections or the special elections unfold, then we get them in office. So what does that say about our city government? What does that say about a former deputy city prosecutor calling me up and telling me they're going to sue me because I posted on my website a check that shows that Ms. Patty Teruya paid rent for her personal rent. And this is, and then there's emails on her government email account that I have in my possession that speak specifically. This wasn't government business, but yet the system is willing to come and threaten me or to create a climate, an atmosphere that I'm supposed to shake in my boots and run away and hide, I guess, and catch the next Greyhound bus to Mississippi. Well, you know, again, that's not going to happen. And you, the voter, so just watch out when hopefully if Mr. Tam is found guilty, he's already pled to some of the charges. If he's found guilty, that he's punished. But I also hope that you, the taxpayer and listeners out there, just don't take hook, line, and sinker for what is being pushed out there by Chuck Toto or the Attorney General's office. And as you've heard me say in the past, I've had the Attorney General to even comment me when we reported on Mufi Hanneman using liquor commissioners, officers to serve as security guards as a private function. So instead of prosecuting Mr. Kim and all of the others that were doing wrong, as the allegations and the testimonies would have shown to Chuck Tato, instead they came to Carol Cox and says, well, we want you, we're going to subpoena you, and you better tell us who told you or what agent spoke to you to let you know that there was some improprieties occurring. So I might be wrong, and it may be improper to call that mafia. But I would say to you, in a democracy, you can call it what you want to, but that's my government, and my government should not be threatening me or creating a climate or an atmosphere where I think I have to be careful, or I'll go to jail if I go to them or go publicly to bring transparency to illegal or unethical behavior within government. So it does, a lot of you probably think, so what? Well, it speaks to a better government, a healthier life, a healthier community, because if the top is corrupt, guess what happens on the bottom? It all filters down, and you won't get the services, and you might end up, you call a city truck to come and clean your drain along the city streets. You might end up having to give a case of beer or $50. You don't know. I mean, if someone can strong-arm you and the Ethics Commission is not being ethical and the Attorney General is subpoenaing people that goes out and bring transparency to illegal government activities, or you get a former deputy city prosecutor that calls you up and tells you now he's a private attorney and working for a private firm but represent a city employee who is concerned that I'm slandering or attacking her character about fundraising and spending of monies and involvement with other people and other complaints within the city within the Ethics Commission that they file. So anyway, that's what last year brought us. And it wasn't wrapped. It was probably the naked, unadulterated, they didn't bother. This town is so wrapped up in power now and friends of friends that they don't have to tip anymore. They just blatantly walk up to you, pick up the phone, call you up, and lay it out that, you know, we can prosecute you because we have people in high places and we'll put you in jail. That's the old Mississippi way. You see, keep everybody in fear. Don't you dare speak and don't you dare drink from that water fountain, boy. Because if you do, we're going to put you in jail. So that's the mindset. So that brings me back to when people say, I don't take offense when they say Hawaii is a plantation or the plantation mentality. Give a few lunas or overseers power and they do the dirty work. You know, I don't know if that comes along with the, do they beat you here? I don't know. But they sure bruise you up mentally. When what happens to the guy who really gets frightened, or the citizen who sees something and want to, but can't because the city prosecutor's office or what have you discourages them and even suggests that they may be charged with something. So anyway, enough of that already. And I'm not mad at anything. It's just that this is a democracy, and there are people over in foreign lands, quote, protecting our freedom of speech, freedom of intrusion, freedom of this and freedom of that. And yet, we're getting it right here. The Patriot Act is live and well, and it intensifies it depending on each office. And so, not mafia, but I would say, darn near close. So anyway, another subject, and we'll change all of this now. Many of you probably saw the study that came out on the hexavalent chromium 6 in our drinking water. Now, I have concern for environmental issues, and I have concern for dirty water, and I don't want to drink dirty water, and I don't want to die from cancer, and I don't want to die anyway. I want to hang around here for a long time, but party's not over yet. But this study, and I'm going to take a different approach to this. In one sense, the study is good. On the other hand, most of you got to know that chromium 6 and if the water department isn't testing for it, they should start testing for it. And if the state isn't testing for it, they should start testing for it. And don't tell us that the EPA they've not listed it as a constituent of concern, so therefore we don't test for it. You shouldn't have to wait until someone die or the big brother come along and tell you, you know, you really should test for these things to protect the people. That's what you should be doing anyway, or taking a proactive effort on in preventing these things. And you know these elements occur. And let's look at chromium 6. You know, in the workplace, chromium 6 is found, and it occurs naturally and in volcanic soils, and which we have here in Hawaii. And the question is, this report was the Environmental Working Group that came out with it, and they talk about it's in the tap water. And that's good that they went and did a study. One of the things that I looked at this, and they call it the Aaron Brockovich chemical. Only one house was studied here in Hawaii upon Wilhelmina Drive, or Rise. So I see that, and I'm still concerned. Oh man, should I drink my water anymore? Or, you know, what should I do? This is me personally. And getting past the fear and learning to swallow that, I then read the report again, and I'm thinking, what is the responsible party or level of responsibility does one have, an environmental group or like myself or anyone, for sounding the alarm and creating mass panic based on one sample in this area? Now, I know Norman, Oklahoma is mentioned and they did sampling there, but this one that sticks out for me, and this is independent of all others, state government and rebuttals, the federal government rebuttal. What I suspect took place here is that the Environmental Working Group, and many of the environmental groups are guilty of these things and this behavior and do practice this, and when I say guilty, I don't imply that they've done something wrong. But to bring up a subject and you really want mass impact, so what you're really trying to do is kick the government in the pants to make them get moving. But on the other hand, you have to ask, okay, how did they pick this one house in Wilhelmina Drive or Rise? Did they fly over and just take a feather, and wherever the feather landed, they went to choose this house? Generally, one would be asked to do multiple samplings, and generally, one would initiate multiple sampling anyway to ward off the naysayers or the scrutiny, or you would want integrity in your comments and your statements. So this bothers me in that sense, not diminishing the concerns that we should have for chromium 6, because in OSHA has a level of chromium 6 in the workplace exposure, for example. They enforce that, and that is you can get it from arc welding. You can get it from stainless plating. You can get it from even the mere basic recycling of metals. Even painting, chromium 6 is found in painting, in paints. So this is why you should use protective gear in painting. So that's from the arrow or breathing it in that sense. So you should use protective gear. But the problem is, what do you do with finding out what's the origin of this chemical? You know, where does it come from? And so that's the real issue here. The report really don't show where it came from. Is it in our system? Is it in the metal, in the piping? Now, will EPA be aggressive and putting as a list of concern, and then the state will now start testing for it? And then what happens once they start testing for it? Does that mean the city will give new filters to each home? Or will it be the responsibility of the citizens to go out and buy a filter that would take out chromium 6? And why does the EPA wait? Now, they know that it causes and contributes to cancer and is a carcinogen. They know that. They being the EPA and the state agencies know it. And as many have accused government agencies of, well, if you don't put it on a list, then we don't have to test for it. And what a heck of an excuse to do, to have at your disposal as a government body to say, well, it might be there, but we're not required to test it. So we do have precautionary measures, and we should be testing for these things on occasion, but we don't. Now, private businesses might do it, like bottling water companies might do it, but we don't ask them to show us the test results. While many of you know now that some of the tests, the bottled water, actually the origin is from tap water. So what would be a better way for the city government, state government, to not wait on the EPA to list this chemical when private bottling companies may have tested it? And we could go there and find out if they have and ask to have that information shared, or it should have been shared. So it's that kind of thing, because private bottling companies would probably be concerned with the liability, the legal liability, the legal concerns of people suing them. So they might be more readily inclined to test for these. And maybe we can have an instant assessment as to what we have in our waters. But that's what's going on with that chromium 6. It should be tested. It should be immediately tested. I don't believe that the study should stand on its own. There's some concerns I have with it. I think what they wanted to do, as I've stated earlier, was just to get the EPA bringing some public embarrassment and exposure to this issue and beat them into submission and, aha, got you moment. But will it rest there, the got you moment, or will we be seeing more aggressive? Will our governor issue an immediate task force effort to task this? Will his new appointed, if they're confirmed, will they in turn be aggressive and be transparent and bring this information out to us as consumers, us as taxpayers and what have you? 524-1080, this is the Carol Cox Show. If you'd like to call, please do give us a call. Going to take a break here for a minute, and I'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Just looking at the clouds out here, and I don't know what you folk are receiving over there. It's heavy rain. It looked like the Poly is a torrential downpour. But anyway, back on this Chromium 6, Norman, Oklahoma, for example, had, here's some of the levels. Population in the study shows 89,952 people. It had a 12.9 parts per billion. 661,000 people in Honolulu, and we have a 2.0 parts per billion. And Riverside, California is a 280,000. They have a 1.69 parts per billion. Madison, Wisconsin, 200,000. They have a 1.58. This is what this report is saying. San Jose, California, 979,000. This is 1.34 parts per billion. And it says here, millions of Americans drink chromium-contaminated water. EWG's investigation is the broadest publicly available survey of hexavalent chromium to date. The 31 cities in chromium-polluted tap water draw from utilities that collectively serve more than 26 million people. In California, the only state that requires testing for hexavalent chromium, water utilities have detected the compound in tap water supplied to more than 31 million. And so it's talking about the levels. But again, EPA has no standards, no levels. But it says the EPA has set a legal limit in tap water for a total chromium of 100 parts per billion to protect against, quote, allergic dermatitis or skin irritations or reaction. Measures of total chromium include the essential minerals, and on and on and on. So the question is, what's going to happen with this? Should we be alarmed or concerned? Yeah, how long will it take? So what I would say is that what we should do, be quick about, is not wait until the EPA listed, is that our state government and our city government should be more aggressive and proactive. And now that this is raised, mind you, they may have a difference of opinion, but the alarms are sounded, and then we, the taxpayer or the citizen, can be rest a little easier if we were to get a response. And that's what we should do with this study, and not wait until the midnight hour and end up finding ourselves in a predicament where it's can't be reversed. And the question is, how do we get this out of the water? That's the big question. And how do we get how do we address this? So the sooner we start, the better. And the Board of Water Supply should initiate some action and take care of it and go immediately. And probably if they found it in high levels, again, I'm not going to just bank on that one study here, because if it was a court case, they'd shoot it down and say, well, what were the control samples? Who sampled it? Was it just in were there stainless steel pipes there at that house, or what have you? What about the house next to it? Well, you know, those kinds of things. I'm not poo-pooing the actual study. It's just that in order, if you raise these issues, then you should be prepared, because if someone pokes holes in it, then it serves to defeat the protection of what you intended to do. So that's what really is the bigger problem, what jumps out at me. And there's some claims that the industry deception delayed protections. The plight of the cancer-stricken residents of Hinckley, California, who in 1986 won $333 million settlement from Pacific Gas and Electric Company for contaminating the tap water with hexavalent chromium, was the basis of a 2000 movie, Aaron Brockovich. So here's my point. If a movie and $333 million didn't motivate the EPA in setting a standard, why would the EWG's report now, years later, some 14 years later, motivate the EPA? So I would encourage you to not to take sides with the test, but my encouragement would be to say, contact the EPA and request of them to immediately initiate a complete study. Dispatch a team, work with the Board of Water Supply, work with all parties, issue subpoenas if you have to the electrical companies, the recyclers, the metal recyclers, painting companies, whomever dump and use city waters that are, you know, metal plating companies, sampling the soils to see if possibly this material is leaching from the soils and going into the reservoirs. Who knows? But again, that's what got me with this report. See, kicking the EPA in the pants some 14 years later, don't get me excited when $333 million settlement and the people file suit and the EPA sat on their thumbs and didn't come up with a standard. So you see where this is going. And that's what I would do with this. And I would be writing, I would call the governors, and I would ask him to immediately make it a priority. Talking about federal monies, EPA has been derelicting their duties, so they should, in fact, come up immediately. And just these cities alone, if this study has identified them, go and sample more in the Wilhelmina area and sample around the island. Come up with a strategy, a better approach. And a lot of people are stressed right now, seeing that and seeing it in the paper and hearing tidbits and not fully understanding what is a safe level. You know, how am I okay? How about children? How about a compromised immune system? How about the elder? Do we wait until the EPA get kicked in the pants and this study motivate them? Well, again, 14 years in a movie didn't motivate them. So don't rest on your pillows and think that it's going to happen. Again, I'm not saying that the study stands on its own and we should all run out, but the issue has been raised. And so to be fair to all parties, and I think that these companies that are potential contributors or sources of this pollutant should voluntarily create a sampling regime and make that available to the public. And then immediately, if we want to do this, this is a new year's coming, so maybe new tactics, just and that tactic being openness. That would really, I mean, would really bring some relief to this whole effort. And I think probably many environmental topics I've heard, but you should see the people when they talk. It's like, well, what do we do now? I'm afraid to drink water. And are there any filters out there? I read somewhere there are filters, and I don't know the cost. I was going to try and figure out, but then I thought, why should I sit here on air and tell you where to go buy a filter when, in fact, I don't know the magnitude. I don't know anything about the filters. And, again, there's many reasons that we should cautiously approach this, but also vigorously pursue our government and ask them to bring us some quick answers to this one. And it's something that It poses a threat if it's there. They recommend this study, at least 74 million Americans in 42 states drink chromium-polluted tap water, much of it likely in the form of cancer-causing hexavalent chromium. Given the scope of exposure and the magnitude of the potential risk, the EPA should move expeditiously to establish a legal limit for the chemical in tap water and require water utilities to test for it. How many of you want to trust the EPA's legal limit on chromium? If they know it's cancer-causing, you've got to be careful with government. Big business can get behind it, influence it, and they'll push the line. So, we don't test for arsenic here. And how much arsenic is dumped down the drain? How much arsenic is present in the, for example, the coal ash that is burned at the power plants or the coal ash, the AES over there? There are ash that they dump up there in Waianae area, past the Waimanalo Gulch landfill. How much chromium is being dumped in the Waimanalo Gulch landfill from recyclers and the ash from H-Power? All of that. So you can see there's a greater implication here why, if this is a concern, why the city board of water supply wouldn't be aggressive in rushing to this, because you open Pandora's box, or you open a can of worms, so to speak, a giant can of worms, snake-sized worms. And that is, once you start to pull this thread and look at chromium-6, you're now going to have to reassess this. You're going to have to determine the source. And it could be many sources, but some of the primary ones that stand out right now is H-Power. How much garbage do they burn annually? And then annually, how much tonnage of ash do they dump in the Waimanalo Gulch landfill? And how much ash have they dumped at Kaka'ako Park? Now, some may argue that, well, that ash doesn't impact the water table here. We don't know. So how much ash has been dumped at Pu'upalai, above the water park up there at Pu'upalai, is the old landfill there that was owned by Grace Pacific? How much chromium was dumped in there? How much chromium is being dumped or generated from there and leaching into the soil? How much is being dumped and was dumped at Kapaa Quarry? So the city would then, talking about big companies, the city would have to go back and start doing samples. And maybe that would be an incentive for them not pushing and urging and testing for this voluntarily early on. Because, they may not want to know. Because once you know, you have to act on it. But it's so easy to dismiss this report and other things, and by saying, well, it's not listed, so therefore we never tested for it. But we do know, and this is striking out at the city government and the state government. They were quick to react, and this was one of the claims, well, the EPA doesn't require us to test. And we don't really have to legally test for it. But they know the potential sources. They know that historically here in Hawaii, you could get a landfill permit and have a private landfill. So there are many landfills dotting the island that had and received chrome plating, received old paint, and received buckets of paint and all other things, and laminates and what have you. You wouldn't want to go and test for that. Because if you tested for it, you'd find yourself with some problems. So that's why they were a little worrisome when the city and the state, how they responded to it. They had some validity in their response, but they know that for example, again, H power. Take you over to Waipahu, for example. In that entire area over by the Waipahu Depot Road, at the end of that, on the Diamond Head end of it, as you know, is the Waipahu incinerator site, the old incinerator site. And that entire area, and I won't say the entire area, but a large portion of that land was in fact used as dumping grounds for the old incinerator that was the ash that was generated by the Waipahu incinerator site. And so what happened to that material? And in those days, not much metal recycling occurred, but they burned a lot of the paint, and they burned. You could throw anything in the trash in those days, and they would burn it. And then they'd haul it over and dump it. So these sources, potentially, this material should have been tested long, long, long time ago. The water sampling should have been tested. And they know that chromium-6 is carcinogenic, and that they should have been testing for it. But it's always better to have Big Brother, who set the rules, and then use Big Brother as an excuse. What a luxury, right? So a couple things wrong with that jumps out at me about the report. I would like to have seen EWG do more sampling. One sample, one house. I mean, all kinds of things could have gone wrong. I mean, one could argue the bottle in which you sample it with was contaminated or had, you know, who knows? And what is the protocol? Did they follow EPA standards or what have you in testing? But again, what was, it could be attacked if it legally. So I would think if they were short of money, come back and do another test and test around the islands, and hopefully the EPA won't take another 14 years to or wait for someone else to do another report, and the state and the city won't wait when they know that there are major potential sources or reservoirs of this material or this substance that could be introduced to the water table. But we never know, and that's the long and short of that. The other issue is with this, how does one, my question was, I call the city, would the city subsidize people that could not afford to buy, I don't know the price of these, and retrofitting their water system with these? Will they allow for, or is there EPA money to address this? But imagine the number of units that they would have to sell or obtain to take an immediate action to cleanse the water, filter the water. So that is really, it's a scary thought, and the cost is going to be big. But you can go on online and Google chromium. Just type chromium 6 in tap water if you're having a problem finding it. And the group that did it was the Environmental Working Group. It's a nonprofit organization, and I think I think what they intended to do was to kick the EPA in the pants, and that I applaud them for. But now, you know, I think the other part is that you, the consumer, you, the taxpayer, should get out there and get involved, regardless of this, the report itself, being that it might be the stimuli of the nucleus for it. But they offered, in this report, EWG targeted 35 cities in 23 states in the District of Columbia for tap water testing. And they chose large cities as well as cities whose water utilities reported frequent detections of total chromium based on our review of state records compiled in EWG's national tap water database and on annual water supply quality reports published by water suppliers. Sample collection, EWG recruited water collectors via its staff and their contacts. Tap water samples were collected from unfiltered taps in homes are in public buildings such as hospitals, library malls. Utility bills were typically reviewed to verify the water source of each sample. All volunteers use standardized sample collection protocol. Samples ran the cold water tap for 2 minutes to clear pipes of standing water and then collected approximately 100 milliliters of tap water and 125 milliliter HDPE container. Samples were packed in coolers and chilled freezer packs and immediately shipped to the laboratory for analysis. With few exceptions, samples arrived within 24 hours of collection. And this is what they offer, and you can read this, and it probably, if you're really concerned, it'll relieve some of the stress for right now, but if it is present in high levels or levels of concern, I would say we need to take an action. But anyway, that's about it, and I will hope to see you the new year, and it has been a pleasure hanging with you and bringing these things to you, and I can't wait for the new year. I'm pretty excited about it, so I will see you next year, and we'll go from there, and be safe, and watch out for the neighbor, and there are people out there that can't breathe with the fireworks, and it's not a joke, and let's be nice to the next door neighbors, and for God's sake, if you're going to shoot them off early, not at 2 in the morning and 3 in the morning. It's something's wrong with that. You must have a poor love life if all you could do is find your way out to at 3 in the morning to shoot firecrackers. Maybe we'll have a how to fall in love show or something. Maybe that's what we need, to give these guys something to do in life, then go out and shoot fireworks at 3 in the morning. Okay, we'll talk to you next week, and see you later. Aloha. Without it.
Thanks for listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.